this little cocktail called Tequila Crown.
Did you just make that up?
Yeah. It's tequila and cranberry juice.
Oh, I was going to guess tequila and crown. I was like, that sounds disgusting.
Ew, no. Tequila crown. Tequila crown. The cross.
Delicious.
Just kidding.
Ew. Okay. Great. Tequila. It's about to get fucking wild. Y'all haven't met tequila, Lila, yet.
No, I guess you haven't.
No. I am drinking a cute little wine from Portugal, from Lisbon, Portugal, that I found at Trader Joe's. It's really adorable and it's really good. And this will be my first drink. Well, I already had a glass, but this will be my second drink since last Saturday. And that's a big deal for me. I haven't had any alcohol.
I think I'm on the same boat with you because that's when we last recorded. No, we recorded on Monday.
Yeah.
So I lied. I definitely drank on Monday. Okay, well.
All right, so shall we do this damn thing? You are listening to It's a Sickness,
a podcast where two friends geek out over all things perplexing in medicine, science, and health.
I'm Nicole.
And I'm Lila.
Catch us on Twitter and Instagram. Just look up at @itsasickness_ and follow. You can catch our sources, visuals, memes, and other pod-related content on there.
Also, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on whichever listening platform you are tuned in. That way, you'll also be notified anytime we release a new episode, which is every Tuesday at 6 a.m.
Okay, so for today's episode, we are exploring the ins and outs of mainstream dating culture. We're going to talk about the history of online dating, share some statistics, and most importantly, unravel the actual science behind dating apps and the effect that they have on our brains and our culture.
You asked for it, kind of, sort of. There were definitely questions submitted, so...
No one asked, but we're telling.
I guess we're just here to tell ourselves on why we are in a... We must incorrectly be using the few times that... Okay, anyways.
We're doing something wrong.
Before we begin, real quick, I'm going to start with sort of like a general timeline that Wikipedia has. Felt like that was a good starting ground. But I was also scanning through other articles, and pre the first launch of one of these online dating platforms in 1959, there was also a history of how people dated. And it's kind of just a fun fact, but I'm not going to get into it too deeply because this is like, it's like when the dinosaurs were alive. I'm just kidding.
Oh my God.
So basically I was like coming up with trying to find like where, when did this all start or whatever, like the first app. And before like online platforms and stuff, they were called, there's this thing called personals. And it's a special section of a newspaper, magazine, etc., where people can place a personal message. And that's kind of how people would meet sometimes to date.
Like putting before, like putting an ad up, basically being like, I'm single and I'm looking for like.
Yeah, which is like, can you imagine? Like,
I actually can.
Well, because isn't it kind of like you have to literally pitch yourself? First of all, there's an infinite number of people reading that.
Imagine if you could just put up an ad being like, look, I am so fucking tired of being played by all these men. This is what I want. So if you got this, come to my door. If not, step.
But what if it's like the number of okay. So like, how do you even do that is what I'm thinking. Like, if you want to, here's my details or here's about me. If you want to meet up, meet me at dawn at
the bridge over the lake. I'll be wearing a yellow top hat.
Yeah, so that's what there was before any of what we're actually going to start covering today.
That's really cute. I bet it was mostly men that posted that.
Yeah, it would be interesting to find out. I think that that would be a fun, like, look up, like, clippings of, like, what people used to say. I recently watched Viking Women on HBO, and their way of, like, writing love notes to each other once upon a time was, like, on pieces of wood, and they would just, like, translate to come home, or, like, just, like, little messages where – so when I think of personals, I'm like, you have such a limited space to be, like – it's like basically if you were to read only an Instagram bio.
It's literally a bio. It's literally a bio. Yeah.
Weird. I don't know. Well, that's what that was. That's how people were talking before. That's how people were meeting. And so what we're going to focus on is starting from 1959. Happy Families. Okay, hold up. It's called Happy Families Planning Services. It launched 1959 by Jim Harvey and Phil Pialer. Both started this as a class project while attending Stanford. And this first ever dating service used a questionnaire and an IBM 650, which is a data processing machine, to match 49 men and 49 women. So that was what Wikipedia has listed as the first app or platform such as this. What would you even call it? Like, do you say, like, online / app dating platforms nowadays?
I would just say online dating would cover an app as well.
Online dating. Yeah. Okay, well, that was the first of the first. And 1964, the birth of St. James Computer Dating Service, later to become Com-Pat. So it happened by Joanne Ball, started the first commercially run computer-generated matchmarking company. Whew. First set of matchups was run in 1964. And then 1965, there was Operation Match, which basically was a part of the Compatibility Research Inc. And the cool thing to know about this one was it seems to be the first one that generated, like, significant revenue. There was a $3 cost of submitting the questionnaire. And in 6 months, they made around 90,000 Operation Match questionnaires that were received. So that's 90,000 participants, which translated into $270,000 in gross profits, which would translate to $1.8 million in 2014. So a lot of fucking money.
So essentially people had to pay to fill out this little questionnaire and then get, like, matched with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, $3 sounds like not a lot right now, but in the 1960s, you used to see a movie for a penny. So, yeah, that's crazy. That's a lot. Okay.
It's a lot. That's a happy meal at McDonald's.
Okay, so tying kind of into also a reason that I mentioned the personals, if that's how you pronounce it. I might be saying it wrong this entire episode. Who knows? In 1965, the New York Review of Books – the New York Review of Books Personals column made a comeback. So this prior form of ways that people were meeting initially through newspapers and magazines made a comeback through the New York Review of Books. So
cute.
That's pretty cool. How or why, I don't know. Like, you usually keep moving forward.
Well, it kind of reminds me of, I think because it's, like, romantic and, like, old-timey. It kind of reminds me of, remember that show that,
like,
I was
going
making?
To, like, Lover's Lane and stuff? Like a cute, like...
No, you know what it reminds me of? Remember that show I was making us watch, Modern Love? That was, like, a thing where, like, these people were sharing their, like, love story with the New York Times. And those episodes were based off of, like, stories that people sent in about their, like, relationships and shit. It kind of reminds me of that. And it's, like, just something about, like, being in the newspaper that, like, makes it, like, old-timey and, like, cutesy. Like, a simpler time.
Yeah, I guess the beauty in that, too, is that everybody wants a somebody. You're going to hear me say that several times, but this is like a public way of maybe people seeing something. It's something that everybody has in common. So I can see there being like a romantic catch to this or whatever, yeah. But also people write people's obituaries. But anyways.
Okay, nobody's talking about that.
Okay, but what I did want to say on this note of the comeback that actually failed, but tried, is that there was, okay, so quote, classifieds made a comeback in America in the 1960s and 1970s, encouraged by the era's inclination towards individualism and social exhibitionism. Everybody was letting it all hang out in other ways. So basically, it sounds like there was this like culture of being like self-aware. And so it's like people were, maybe it translates to some like putting in more effort to find somebody, like just being forward about it is what it sounds like. And that's why they think it made a comeback. And then you would get ads like astrologer, 27, psychology student, desires to establish a non-superficial friendship with sensitive, choicelessly aware persons who are non-self-oriented, deep, and wish to unearth real personal relationships.
Whoa.
So just – yeah. This is going to tie into something that I'm going to talk about earlier – or later, but I just thought that it was interesting that it seemed like a shift in the approach that people were taking with their dating lives. So What was going on in the 1960s and 70s? Racism?
Always.
I mean, that was always going on, but what was like...
So 50s was like end of World War II. 60s was Civil War. 70s was like the like hippie free love revolution.
I can see where people were just being more open to... People were getting it on and popping.
I think everyone was on drugs following the civil rights movement. Is how I would say.
Everyone was like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? I'm done with your asses. LSD!
Okay, some very quick final launches that I'm going to mention. 1976, Great Expectations is founded, and video dating service is started by Jeffrey Ullman. Never heard of what Great Expectations is, but interesting to know that in this 1976, video dating services started.
Great Expectations, even greater letdowns.
Well, I can't. Okay,
the
what
greater
does
the
for?
Expectation, the greater the disappointment.
But really, because I'm thinking, like, what did this do for catfishing? You know what I mean?
What year was this where this video thing was happening?
1976 is when that started happening.
How?
I'm unsure.
Video on what?
Video dating service.
They didn't have internet.
There's probably, I'm assuming.
They just send, like, videotapes to each other?
There has to be. What was there before the internet?
I have no idea. Books?
What was planet Earth?
Records? Records? Vinyls?
Here, I'm going to go ahead and while you do your segment, research into that because I actually do want to know now.
Yeah.
Because we do know that that's before.
Okay, we'll table that then.
Yeah,
we'll mail.
Call Wikipedia out.
The post office.
You send a
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, you send a little VHS tape to your love.
I know.
That has to be what it is, which maybe. I love that. If that's what it is, I love that.
I want to get my hands on him.
I'm a fucking sucker for this shit.
Oh, yeah. It's very cute. And at the same time, sometimes it can be depressing. But anyways, it's kind of like when you watch The Notebook, when you know that you're just going to cry, but you still watch it.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's move on. Okay, 1994, the first modern dating app is launched. That's a year after I was born. 1995, Match.com is launched by who fucking cares? 97. Oh my God. I just can't pronounce his name. Gary Kremen? 1997, J-Date launches, and it's a dating service targeted at Jewish singles, which is pretty cool.
Okay.
2000, eHarmony launches for online dating service for long-term relationships. Christian Mingle follows right after.
For short-term toxic relationships. Oh, yeah.
I fucking died. Okay, so I don't know how I didn't realize this, but this point, it says Christian Mingle's launches in 2001 for atheists. And this is why
we can't go on Wikipedia. At least you didn't just read it without thinking in full confidence.
I'm done. If I had said that seriously, that would have been so funny. 2002, Friendster is launched, a friendship dating and early general social networking website all rolled into one. And in 2005, Facebook literally bites them and expands the idea into a general social interconnected website. This could be non-objective views by whoever the fuck wrote it on Wikipedia. But
did the person on Wikipedia that wrote this say literally bites it?
No.
Oh, it's like, I don't think copies. You should include this in your fucking sources.
But they did say Facebook copies. It's the same shit. It's just in our language. 2002, Ashley Madison launches, which I had no knowledge of, and now I do. Ashley Madison, which is prominently known as a networking service for extramarital relationships. For all the pieces of shits that need an Ashley Madison in their life, call 1-800. Suck my ass.
She spells her name Ashleigh. Okay, I hate that.
All right, yeah, I hate it too, but it had to be known. Oh my god, what did we just promote? First of all, y'all suck.
It sounds Ashley Madison sounds like a fucked up like furniture store. Like, no. I think there is a furniture store that's like something Madison. It's like a home goods store or something. There's, oh no, there's Ashley Furniture. Ashley Furniture.
Ashley's Furniture, yeah. That's hella funny. I don't know
that
who
is
Ashley
so fucking is. Stupid.
All right, PrimeSingles.net launches as a dating service, and it's targeted for singles over 60. So it's later changed to Single Seniors Meet in 2009, and then it changes in 2011 to Silver Singles.
Silver.
So over the age of 50 and you're single and you're seeking. Primes. I mean, singles.
Silver Fox.
Silver.
Seeking Silver Foxes.
Oh my god, I just put together that they're referencing.
Silver Foxes, their hair.
Yeah, Silver Singles.
That is so cute.
And then 2012, Tinder and Hinge come around. And that's
when it stops being cute.
Yeah, Bumble came around in 2014. So Bumble, real quick, I always thought was like a friendship app. Like,
it has that
a girl
option
meet
on there.
Girl.
It has that option okay. on there. Oh, it has all the options.
I've heard a lot of things about all of them. But yeah. Okay, well, moving on to very briefly, I'm just going to briefly kind of paint a picture of like the stigma, because I think that falls into history and also to your point earlier, why it's considered the number one way to meet people now, but it's not everyone's cup of tea. And it's because one, people's like own liking, but something that I'm seeing about the failures of like earlier versions of this is just a stigma of how people, and I understand that. I don't even know how to like elaborate on it further than I guess that I could say that's what's holding me back.
What is holding you back? Why don't you share?
It's the concept, like, for me. Like, I look at my dating history. I, except for one dude who I think I've mentioned before, we said, like, I was dating a Christian rapper. You were dating, I don't know, rapper. a trying rapper. was trying. And that was the only relationship where
he was trying to be a rapper.
Yo, we need to shut up because apparently our exes listen to
I don't give a motherfucking fuck.
I'm going to ask someone to do and say what I want. But I might, like, my habits are, my patterns are I swoop, you swoop too, but I just, like, don't have the energy. Like, there's a lot. Like, the whole concept would mean that I have to sit there and have all these small conversations with several people. I don't like that just – you're gonna get into the psychology and stuff later.
Yeah,
so I
totally will.
But the psychology of it actually has a lot to do with the stigma. And my point that I want to kind of keep in the forefront of everyone's minds is that historically speaking, in a lot of the research that I was doing, it's like that was a thing, was like the stigma on how you meet people wasn't always so just accepted and okay to do. I found that I want to cover one of my main sources is a podcast episode. The podcast itself is called X Appeal with Jay Marlin and Jay Lamers. The episode name is Episode 6, Science Behind Dating Apps. And they have a guest host. Her name is Dr. Amanda Gesselman or Gesselman. I'm going to keep calling her Amanda, and she is head of research analytics and methodology, head of research analytics and methodology core at the Kinsey Institute. And I really enjoyed listening to their episode. I felt like it gave a lot of information that, like, the modern day dater would want to know. And she seemed very knowledgeable on it. So, also, before I get started, the two hosts that run this podcast used to fuck, and that's why it's called X Appeal. They used to fuck, and then they stopped fucking and decided to make a podcast. And
they didn't stop fucking.
It's funny when you listen to them because he's like, she's like, yeah, because see, like, I do my research and I want to know who the fuck I'm talking to, and I don't care. I play a detective. And he's like, yeah, you are kind of crazy. Like, they like, take little jabs at each other. Like, you could tell that they used to fuck. Anyways.
They're still fucking.
So, the modern day way of dating, the common place to find a partner is online dating. Dating apps have now surpassed other ways of meeting someone, anyone, really, through or the route of meeting someone through friends, family, and, like, outings is not as successful, according to what she said. Dr. Amanda. This is applied through across age ranges as well, and gender and ethnicity. This episode was recorded last year, and so this rings truth, unless Nicole says otherwise during her segment. But it's the literal number one way of meeting people. So now that we know that, we know why me and you are single, because I guess we don't really partake in it.
No.
So I guess we're just doomed, and I guess I'm just going to go throw myself out the window now. BRB. Okay, so how much has dating app usage grown? And also, what's contributing to it? What are, like, the advantages? Why are we seeing, like, an increase in more recent years as far as online dating? So, exponentially speaking, according to a yearly survey called Singles in America, a nationally representative survey where single Americans are asked about their love and sex lives and what they're looking for, showed that 20% of singles across all age groups met the last person that they dated online. So that's 1 in 5 Americans, and that's what you had said.
I said 1/3 of all marriages in America begin online. Yeah.
Okay. So specifically 20% across all age group of people said that the last person that they dated
they met
was
online.
Yeah, meeting online. So mm-hmm. That's 1 in 5 America.
That's a lot.
One in five Americans meet their significant other online, or met their last significant other online. She also suggested that a possible explanation for the sudden growth was Tinder. Tinder did change the game in a lot of ways. I don't use it and I even know it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you don't have to use it to know about it. But the Grindr app proceeded. And that was popular in the gay community. And for heterosexual people, there was like a pre-Tinder app called Blender, and it just wasn't as big of a hit. Okay. Have you ever heard?
To share this fucking story. I've heard of Grindr, never Blender. I have to share this story. So our mutual best friend, who is a gay man, Jason, he texted me today and he said, he was like, add me on CoStar. So I added him and he was like, well, we're not compatible with sex and aggression. And I said, oh my God, is that why you were never attracted to me? And he said, yes. And that one fact that I love dick.
That's just secondary to.
Shout out to you, Jason.
How much has it grown? The reason why it's also grown is because we also factor in social media. That in and of itself is a form of online dating. Argue with Nicole, but I feel like that's like so self-explanatory. I see so many people, and it's fine, but use social media and I can clearly tell that you're just – you really like are looking for somebody, which is fine. So social media, not to say everyone uses it to date, but it's definitely used to sort of – whether it's just for screening or to like directly shoot your shot, it's utilized for seeking singles. And then also dating apps are useful because a lot of okay, this is where I was trying to go with the whole Grindr and the gay community, LGBTQ community. So dating apps became useful because there was advantages over meeting face to face. For the LGBTQ community specifically, we know that it once upon a time and still is not safe. It's sick, but people were going like on and like, I mean, it was hate crimes. I'm just going to leave it at
100%.
That.
I mean, well, those meeting people online is dangerous, period.
Yeah, it is, and period.
Even more for a marginalized group.
Yeah, but this is arguing that – so this is arguing that for the LGBTQ community, something like Grindr, though yes, it does have those concerns and problems, it was sort of like a platform for them to be safer.
It was like filtering out – because it was only for people of their community versus – it was like filtering out other things.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really cool, and I think that has a lot to contribute to the – exponential growth of online dating, especially considering that in recent years it's turned into being legal to be able to
same-sex marriage is legal.
So I don't, because I felt like that was important as far as, yes, it's grown and it's more prominent, but not necessarily in the way that I thought of it initially. Some conflicts is age. Something that's happening in mainstream dating world is that women who turn 40 are noticing a decline in responses.
Oh God.
Yeah. So why at suddenly at the age of 40, it's so significant that it's, I mean, literally tracked down to when you turn 40, you stop getting
and
as much messages.
People wonder why women lie about their age all the time.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's true. It's a valid reason. It's self-explanatory. Men can go in there and filter the age range that they want. We also know there was another podcast that I listened to that talked about how it's also fact. I think Cupid, there was like a Cupid blog that covered how men search for the youngest aged range or the youngest age range that they list as them being interested in. Whereas women obviously seek older men. In that same podcast, though, okay, so this was interesting. So what age people say that they're interested in versus who they actually message. Men would consistently message at the lowest possible age, ew. And women, this is the interesting thing about women, at the age of 27, which we are both aged, women at the age of 27 had like a, they have a slight spike of them messaging younger men. And then immediately, immediately at 28, there is a spike of them messaging older men. So literally data shows that women at 27 start trying to go for younger men and they're like, actually, they're like, you know what?
I think 27 is like an interesting age for me because 27 feels very more adult than like.
It's womanhood.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
I guess during me being 26, it was the entire pandemic. So I don't really have a comment on that. But being 25 still felt like pretty like free and like, like whatever. Like 27 feels, I'm like, okay, I'm basically 30. Like it's a round up, like whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really getting to that like point where like I'll see men that I like used or would have been like attracted to or considered my type, and I'm immediately my next thought is like, oh, that guy's probably like 22, like no, he's way too young for you, like
yeah. And it's not even just like I think like when you say that, some people might think like it's really more about the mental switch of like, okay, I can analyze men better. And
I can really read them and know, like, yeah, what's going on. And
like
and,
what I'm getting myself into ahead of time.
Yeah. And I've already had my toxic relationships. I've already done that.
Don't need more.
Please. So ready to move on from that.
Other conflicts that I do want to briefly mention and then later go down a rabbit hole on. Easy access and instant gratification is – sort of like the a con or like a conflict occurring because this is
yeah, we're gonna talk about instant gratification.
Yeah, it's like a shift between like I guess depth, because the value of these interactions are happening more quickly. That makes it conflicting, and that's like a prominent issue that people are saying about the dating current mainstream dating world. Okay, so that's just some kind of intro, fun information to know a little bit about the history and some information on dating apps and stats. Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, so let's learn some more.
Okay, I have quite a bit. I had some fun with this, so. Okay, I have a couple of facts that stats that I found slightly interesting. So 27% of 18 to 34-year-olds use dating apps or websites to solely boost their self-esteem.
Okay.
Eagle trips. 7% of people in the U.S. admitted to using a dating app or website to cheat on their significant other.
Only 7% admitted. That's
only 7% admitted. I imagine
round that up to 100.
I was about to say we could at least triple that.
Yeah.
I have seen people's fiancés on dating apps, obviously people's boyfriends. I have seen so much shit. 34% of people have found out that someone lied about their identity or been catfished. I'm sure it's more.
Yeah. There's and a whole ass fucking show.
Right. And then this was kind of interesting to me because it kind of went – this is like one of those stats where you hear like in the beginning I said 72% of millennials are on dating apps. This stat is 70% of female online users have never used a dating website app as of – this stat was generated in 2019, January of 2019. 70% of female online users have reported never using a dating website or app.
Okay.
Basically, Tinder, Hinge, Bumble, all these little apps, they all work or claim to work based off of things that we call algorithms, which are what essentially all of our social media functions from.
So like a formula for to achieve a certain function.
Yeah. And I was always like, what? I remember algorithms from like calculus and shit like that. But basically, an algorithm is a process or set of rules to be followed in calculations or other problem-solving operations, especially by a computer. When I was researching all this stuff, I was like, oh, fuck. I can't. This is all about like computer science. Like, I don't do that. Like, I don't speak math or computer science. A very simple example of an algorithm would be if someone asked you to find the largest number in an unsorted list of numbers. If you were given a list of 5 different numbers, you could figure this out very easily with no computer needed. But if you're given a ton of numbers, asked to find the biggest one, that would take you much longer, which is where an algorithm, that's basically what they do, but at a much faster speed than a human ever could. So focusing kind of on the Tinder algorithm, because it is the largest used dating app in America with 7.86 million users. Yeah, so we'll focus on that. Also, as you had stated earlier, it's kind of been the most successful, whatever. By successful, I guess I just mean has the most users, not successful in making relationships. So this is from an article from Vox.com, which was written in 2019.
Okay, because you wanted to fucking say something when I used a Vox article.
No. Vox.
Oh.
Vox. Don't come for me.
What is Vox?
It's kind of like a it reminds me of like a Vice.
Okay.
Similar. I actually don't know though. Okay.
Okay, moving on. Vox.
Vox. They're not like a news I mean, I guess they are. Okay, anyways. So apparently a few years back, Tinder let some reporter look at their secret internal Tinder rating, because all of these apps hide their algorithm and are very like secretive about the way that their shit works. But apparently this reporter got to look at his internal rating on Tinder. So my experience with Tinder is I don't have one. I remember when it first came out, I was in college and I was in a relationship and I was like, thought it was like a social media app. And I like got on there and I was like, oh, this is not and got off. But I guess it's kind of like the way that like an Uber driver has like a rating, like, but you can see it. This one's secret.
Wait, so, you can rate people on Tinder?
No, you have like a internal, like secret rating that either catapults you forward in the algorithm, okay. Or
so yeah. The algorithm rates the user to and into like say like a certain category
to like place them.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So this reporter gets to look at his secret internal Tinder rating, and he vaguely explained how the system works. So the Tinder app was using an ELO rating system. So the ELO rating system is a method for calculating the relative skill levels of players in zero-sum games such as chess, named after its creator, of course, Arpad Elo, a Hungarian-American physics professor. So the ELO system was originally invented as an improv chess rating system over some other previous system, but is also used as the rating system in soccer. Soccer, American football, basketball, Major League Baseball, table tennis, and board games such as Scrabble. So this system is like used in sports, like completely the same system. The system that Tinder uses for their algorithm is the system that we use in all of our sports.
That is insane.
This was so, it is insane.
I guess that's also why it explains the success of it though.
Yeah, totally. It explains so much. Also, as soon as this started talking about sports, I was like, okay. So I'm going to briefly explain this further. So the difference in the ratings between two players serves as a predictor of the outcome of a match. So two players with equal ratings who play against each other are expected to score an equal number of wins. So a player's Elo rating is represented by a number, which may change depending on the outcome of rated games played. So after every game, the winning player takes points from the losing one. I know, I'm like, sports? What are you talking about?
Okay, so are you keep explaining.
So the best way that I could think about it is when you think of like a tournament happening and you see like in movies like the tournament board and you have like it's like all like branched out and you see the two people at the bottom and then one person moves up and then eventually winners of the tournament move up.
But this is more I think of an example of it would be, because it's not based on like the team, is the team moving up? It's literally athletic stats.
Yeah.
And what it sounds like is you're saying that they use that algorithm. So essentially, athletes with the same stats that could compete against each other. So is it like
only the athletes with the same stats would compete against each other?
Because would fucking, because it, like my mind is like, okay, so then athletes from different teams or different clubs in the same spot, soccer speaking, like I don't think that they would be very compatible.
Right. Great point.
I'm confused. Okay, keep going.
Yeah, the basing building a relationship around a competitive game is probably not that great of an idea. What do I know?
Also, please take nothing that I'm saying as like an opinion. I'm learning as I go. I just can't.
Yes. Okay. So I'm glad you're enjoying this. Okay. Not that you said you were, but
no, I'm actually just evaluating my entire life. It's fine.
Yeah. Keep going. Okay. So in Tinder speak, you rose in the ranks based on how many people swiped right or liked you, but that was weighted based on who the swiper was. So the more right swipes the person had, the more their right swipe on you meant for your score.
Okay, so the way that they're basing value on actions is twisted, is a summary of that.
Tinder then serves people with similar scores to each other more often, assuming that people whom the crowd had similar opinions of would be in approximately the same tier of desirability. So essentially, it's like an adult version of like Hot or Not.
Yeah. Ew, that's sick.
It's so sick. Sick.
That's like really sick.
Yeah. So it's like, it's like a fucked up, weird, like popularity contest type of thing, but also like a game.
Yeah.
Like a competitive game. But the people, like people on Tinder, they don't have no idea that they're participating in this. Like I'm literally describing the algorithm.
Yeah.
The formula. Wild. So then in March of 2019, Tinder stated that they no longer use this Elo system that I just described. And instead they have some new system that's like great technology, blah, blah, blah. Basically, it was the Elo score evolved once Tinder had enough users with enough user history and data to predict whom would like whom. And it was like based solely on the ways that users select many of the same profiles as other users who are similar to them.
Okay, so it's tracking activity over stats.
Yes,
more.
Yes. Okay. And then the way one user's behavior can predict another's without ranking people in a competitive way. So it's like if me and you have like the same type of the same preference in men and we're swiping similarly, like they're going to show us similar people.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, but like that. It's just also fucked up.
I'm surprised.
I'm shocked. Yeah. So obviously physical appearance is a huge factor in this, but the algorithm accounts for other traits as well, which is mostly just age and location is the only other information that you need to have a Tinder profile. So the takeaway here with the algorithm is actually pretty simple. It can pair people based on their past swiping. As you get closer and closer to the end of a reasonable selection of individuals in any dating app, the algorithm will start to recycle people you didn't like the first time. These algorithms also rewards pickiness and and disincentivizes people to that swipe right too much. So they don't want, they don't want people on there like super swiping, which is a fucking term that I kept seeing, just trying to like get their stats up. Like, oh, I like everyone, you know?
Yeah. Just trying to catch a fish, any fish, doesn't matter what fish.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Know anyone like that? If you don't know anyone like that, you're the person that's like that.
Yeah,
you're the person that's like that.
Okay, which is, yeah.
It also, this is fucking crazy. It also tracks when users exchange phone numbers and can pretty much tell which accounts are being used to make real life connections and which are used to boost the ego of an over swiper.
I like that.
I like that. But that's crazy. So it's tracking if you like exchange phone numbers.
Yeah, well, that's actually good, because I think that's how – well, there's good and bad in everything. But that could mean, like, safer – being able to follow safer community guidelines and stuff. Again, I don't know. I've never experienced. But I can only imagine the fucking trash you get on there. I mean – yeah.
So, okay. My experience, which is very little with dating apps, is – I created like a Bumble account maybe like December of like 2019, I think, or maybe like early 2020, pre-pandemic.
What were the requirements? What were the, like, say the whole experience?
Okay, so.
Because people want to know.
Well, I guess I mean, we'll it tell. Doesn't.
It doesn't have to be personal, but like, what does somebody who hasn't considered or has considered Bumble, like, what I think that
I chose Bumble because I felt like it was like where, and it is like the app where like the woman has the most control and you kind of are like can't really be seen unless you want to be or like whatever it is. So I made my little profile. And that in itself, I was like, I can't do this. Like, I wanted to delete it multiple fucking times.
Does it ask questions like, what do you like to do? Or does it ask just like gender, birthday,
age? It asks a lot. There's actually like a lot of filters. It asks like your zodiac signs, your religious preferences. Oh. Do you drink? Do you smoke? Do you want kids? Do you want a relationship? Like, it has
yes, no.
I was like, yes, no, I don't know.
It depends.
It depends.
What's the pitch here?
And then the thing about Bumble is that the woman has to initiate the conversation. So the idea is that you don't have your fucking like inbox flooded with a bunch of shit you don't want.
Okay.
So you're basically in charge of – men can swipe on you, but only if you swipe on them back and you match, then you, the woman, has to initiate a conversation.
Interesting. Okay. I know that's one of the top, one of the things I kept seeing is like, that is what people are asking. And for some reason, what people care about, I don't know. Like for me, how I just said, I swoop, we both do like,
yeah.
So how do you approach that online? Because I don't message anybody. I don't.
Right. So that was my next thing. So then after like you get a couple matches, then you're like, especially me, like, I fucking hate small talk. And I literally had it, like, in my bio that I don't like small talk. And that I have nothing to say to anyone over text.
Good.
And so then I was like, okay, what the fuck do I say to these people that I don't know? And it's like almost like at that point, like, you're being, like, thirsty as fuck. And it just feels – it's very weird. It was very weird for me. I can't. I am not gifted in that way.
Okay.
At all.
But know that about yourself, and that's good.
Yeah. Well, for me, that's why, that's why online dating has not worked for me, because I am a very in-person type of person. Like, I don't have anything to say to people I don't know on texting or anything else. Like, I like to be in it there and whatever, but I
know there's times that I literally don't text people. It's not so small talk for me is like hard. It's reaching
it feels inauthentic to me, and I don't like doing inauthentic shit. So that didn't work out for me in any way.
Shape or but form. But
I did try it. Hinge claims to use a special type of machine learning to predict your taste and serve you a daily, quote, most compatible option. It supposedly uses a Gale Shapley algorithm, which was created in 1962 by two economists who wanted to prove that any pool of people could be sifted into stable marriages. That sounds so psycho.
Yeah.
But Hinge mostly just looks at patterns for who its users have liked or rejected, pretty much similar to Tinder. So what I was getting out of this is they're all the same. Okay. So that brings us to, do they actually work? 47% of people have known someone who has met a romantic partner on a dating app or website.
Okay. So half the population basically
knows someone that, yeah.
Yeah.
Which
is telling of how prominent it is as a source of meeting people to possibly date.
Yeah.
Or whatever other intention.
I have two coworkers that work under me. One replaced the other. So the first one, she had met her boyfriend, who is now her fiance, on Tinder. And then my current coworker that replaced her also met her boyfriend on Tinder.
Okay. Wow.
So I definitely know people that, yeah.
Success stories?
Yeah. And every time she's always like, have you tried dating apps? And I'm like, bitch. I'm fine. I'm good. Yeah, so there's that. So which one is most successful for a long-term relationship?
What, of the two, like Tinder and Bumble?
Or no, just of all. Uh-huh. So there's no actual that I could find stat on it of which is the most successful for a long-term relationship. But across the board, it basically says Match.com, which has a majority older users on it. So it makes sense.
Do you know about the algorithm with Match or how they approach?
I think it's more profile based and like questionnaire. Yeah. And like compatibility.
More reasonable.
There's no swiping fucking left and right on people on Match.com.
It's more effort. Yeah.
I think you have to take a lot more. It requires a lot more of like building a profile, building your online like persona. And then eHarmony follows closely behind as being like relationships up the butthole. Which one is the worst for a long-term relationship? I would say
Ashley Madison.
I would say Tinder. Everyone knows Tinder is a fucking hookup app. Like, that's the thing about Tinder. And then I fucking love this. This was under the category of best niche and quirky dating apps. So this app is called Hater.
Okay.
Tired of all the lovey-dovey cutesy dating apps? Then Hater might be just up your alley. It's a simple idea, really. Instead of listing all the things you love on your dating profile and engaging in a passionate conversation with someone who shares your joy, just talk about the things you hate. Hater will ask your opinion on various topics, and you'll be matched with someone who hates all the same things as you. I was like, can they sponsor us? I just read their ad.
I'm not fucking kidding.
I'm not fucking kidding because I love it. I love it. I will sign up for.
Yeah, I will push the fuck out of that. I'd like to check it out just for fun.
Why not? It's like, why not? That makes sense. That makes more sense to me. I'm not going to fucking lie.
It does because I think it's we can fluff up trying to pitch our positive and our good.
Yeah, sell yourself.
Which are important, but yes. I think that when you can come, I guess that's more, I guess in a lot of ways you have to be forthcoming to talk about the things that you hate. There's no real, like, why would you make up shit that you hate?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
it's just more real and like.
It's a better approach.
It's like, do you want to see the ugly side of me?
Yeah.
Type of thing. And then you'll love this. There's another one called Dig. Everyone loves their dog, but do you really, really love your dog? Dig is a dating app designed for dog lovers only. Show off your furry friend in your profile, do some swiping, and then meet at a local dog park for a date. A great way to meet someone who values their pet as much as you do.
Oh my God, that's hella fucking funny.
Goes on there but has no pet. I'm just here for the dogs.
Photoshop the dog into my profile picture.
Literally catfishes them. Dogfishes them. Oh, they also have another one called Align. If you believe the tale of your next love is written in the stars, then Align might be the best app for you. Users are matched on their star signs and chart. You can also build your profile, but the core idea is that you should be dating someone who matches with your sign.
Okay, I like that.
Capricorn, us too. I know, I was like, I dig that.
Yeah, I checked that one out. Well, what I like about that is that it sounds like the algorithm is based on personality traits, yeah, which are way more personable than a formula that matches you based on how similar you are.
Well, and a lot of, I mean, the swiping concept is really, what are you looking at? You're looking at the physical appearance of a person. That's the first thing you're looking at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're swiping right or left really based on that.
Yeah.
And then once you see someone you like, you're like, okay, let me check their other shit. So let's get into some psychology. So how does it affect our brain and the way we think about relationships? What is going on in our brain here? So a lot of the chemicals that fire in our brain while we use dating apps stem from the app's gamification and instant gratification of relationships.
Bing, bing, bing.
Bing, 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 bing.
Everyone,
bing, bing.
This is the highlight of the show.
Yes.
I can easily tell you.
So gamification is the application of gaming mechanics to non-gaming environments to make difficult tasks more palatable.
Yep.
So we turn things into games that we don't want to do that are hard for us. Not healthy at all.
No.
It's like, you have trauma? No, you're fine. Turn it into a game. Take it out on the mat. Take it out on the field.
Well, it's like you're playing a game to find a serious non-game relationship. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So, not everyone. Some people, their approach.
Well, and it's like, yeah, finding a relationship should be hard. It's kind of important.
Yeah, I want to know more about the psychology. It's not a game. No, it isn't. So.
All right, so according to Psychology Today, dating apps become addictive through neurochemical changes in our bodies. So playing games on your phone releases endorphins, your body's endogenous painkiller. We've talked about endorphins many times before on this podcast.
Yes.
So this can reduce your anxiety levels, which feels great, or can even spark the feeling of being high. Matching with someone on Hinge, Bumble, whatever, floods your brain with adrenaline because you feel like you've won something and it's done on purpose. After all, unpredictable rewards cause more activity in reward regions of the brain than rewards that we know are coming.
Yeah.
So it's the whole like matching, like, oh, you swiped on them. Oh, they swiped on you too. It's like, oh, I win. Like they chose me. Like I win. The gamification of dating apps releases the neurochemical dopamine in addition to its partner serotonin. On dating apps, dopamine hits your system in one of two ways. So one, you receive an unpredictable reward and your brain rewards you with a healthy dose of adrenaline and dopamine. And two, your brain adapts to the unpredictable reward system and preemptively rewards your anticipated risk. So either way, you're like building this feedback loop. So your brain is learning to anticipate and reward your every exposure to the source of that release.
Mm-hmm.
This is commonly known as a dopamine loop, which happens also when you take drugs. It is a sense of reward and seeking out more of the same to get an arousal hit. Our brains love to feel good. All of our brains are like literally little drug addicts. They're literally drug addicts.
it's literally all near just messaging going through of chemical
reactions.
And they're
like, oh, this feels good. Let's do this thing again. We want to feel good all the time, so it's no surprise that this feedback loop can also lead to addiction and burnout of equal measures. So this brings us to the rise and culture of ghosting.
Oh, yes. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Have you ever been ghosted?
I have. Have I ever been ghosted?
You've either been ghosted or you've done the ghosting. Have you ever ghosted?
I've definitely ghosted, but I mean,
I definitely have to.
The severity of it is on a low. Like, I've never, like,
fell off the face of the planet.
No, like, in the sense of, like, I measured that by how much did I care about.
Well, and how much do you need to be actually concerned about where I am?
Exactly.
Other person.
Like, is it considered ghosting when you don't respond to a person that you've never had?
That you barely
knew? Yeah, or, like, that keeps trying, but, like,
that doesn't know your last name?
Yeah, like, just, like, you know, like, that doesn't count. That does not count. But, like, ghosting as far as, like.
I would agree.
Yeah, ghosting as far as, like, have I talked to somebody and then they've all of a sudden, with no explanation, stopped talking to me? No. There's always been either a downfall or, but have I ghosted somebody? Not anyone that I had, like, a deep relationship with, I would say.
Okay. So when we think about the psychology of dating apps, it's not just about ourselves. We have to think about the social implications and how it affects cultural interactions, Lila. So
I just fucking said that I did. Okay, you're going to call me out. We'll talk about it later.
So take ghosting. When an individual, if you don't know what this is, are you living on this fucking planet? But okay. When an individual withdraws from a person's life and ignores their attempts at communication. So we have simultaneously both a dramatic proliferation of ways to find partners and a significant decrease in the risk of reputation damage resulting from poor behavioral patterns in your real life social circle. So we have this huge pool of, like, partners that has, like, dramatically increased while a significant decrease in basically, like, being held accountable for your actions.
Yeah. 100% I agree with this.
100%. Yeah. So prior to online dating, you were much more likely to date partners from similar social circles, meaning if you acted like a jerk, your friends would find out.
Yeah.
With online dating, that's not a fucking thing. So you can just do whatever. Anything goes. So, quote, this is a quote. Quote.
What is it? What are you about to do?
The normalization of bad dating behavior, giving it humorous, childlike, almost affectionate names like ghosting or submarining.
And hashtag respectfully.
Submarining? I've never heard that.
I've never heard of submarining. I'll look it up. Keep going.
Okay. Like, ghosting or submarining only serves to enable users to dismiss what might otherwise be regarded as rude or hostile or otherwise unacceptable behavior as just part of the experience.
Okay, wait, pause. Also known as zombieing.
Acting like you're dead? I could reply, I literally died.
I can't. Also known as zombieing. Submarining is a form of ghosting where a person drops off the grid only to then get back in touch months later, perhaps just as you were finally getting over being ghosted in the first place.
Sorry, I just read this. So then they go on to say that the game-like interface of many dating apps is perfectly primed for antisocial dating behavior. Ironic. The design could contribute to an objectification of user profiles and consequent reported narcissistic behavior of ghosting, breadcrumbing, benching, wow. And just general dishonesty. If they are just characters in a game, then they do not have feelings to hurt. This is literally describing how it is, not even just online. This is literally just describing how dating is now.
Period. Mainstream dating culture.
Mainstream dating. Yeah. This is literally just how it is to date.
Yeah.
In our society at this age.
Mm-hmm. No one's responding to me, so now I have a negative perspective on it. Yeah. Like, Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. And it's like the thing of like thinking that you need to have like a rotation and feeding your ego and there's being like some sort of like narcissistic element to it.
Like, why are you actually here?
Yeah.
Are you alone, like, or do you actually, like, I feel like there's, yeah.
Why are you actually here? It's because you're lonely. So yeah, there's a lot. On a huge front.
Yeah.
I love that they use the term benching. That's what I like to call on the back burner. You're benched. I know, he's acting up. He's on the bench right now.
Little bench warmer.
Oh. Okay, so to end on a positive note, after I just ripped everything apart, there are some positives, as we said. Dating app users are more likely to make varied and diverse connections. There is an argument that online dating leads to a more integrated society with increased interracial relationships, which I would definitely agree with. Economist. What is wrong with me? Economist. Wow. Jose.
She has a biomedical science degree and nobody say anything about it. Economist. This is.
Some dude at the University of Essex reported that online dating corresponds with way more interracial marriages and way stronger marriages from a mathematics perspective, not to mention that 30% of marriages and a staggering 70% of gay relationships result from online dating. As you were saying earlier, it has drastically expanded exposure and opportunity for relationships to marginalized groups, especially in LGBTQ+ communities.
Wow. Okay. I like that.
Yeah. No, and that's great. And it's really what you were saying earlier about there being a safe space.
Yeah.
So those are the only positive things I could
have. Are we ready to have like a 2-cent conversation?
Yeah, that's the end of my seg.
All right, let's do this. I like that. I learned a lot that I didn't consider before, and now we're going to talk some shit. All right, so.
That was a wild ride, dude. So much info that I didn't expect to get.
It's a lot of info that I feel like, too, that it's not necessarily a disease. Like, I feel like anybody who's single and wants to approach the dating world and doesn't know how, this is like beneficial information. But we did get some submitted questions through a poll. Is it called a poll or a questionnaire? I guess we had our own questionnaire that we did.
Our own dating app.
No, we don't. Please don't come here for that.
Should we launch it next?
It's a sickness. If anything, you're going to be paired up by your sickness. So it's no better than the current algorithms out there. I feel like we did answer at least one of them, but we'll focus on reiterating if we have. So the first one was the success rate of finding a committed relationship via web dating apps. It sounds like,
so what I can say to that is a third of marriages in America right now were from online dating.
And out of five Americans, their last relationship was through an online platform.
And 50% of Americans know a person who's dating someone they met online. So I would say that they are
worth considering.
Can be successful.
Yeah. I'm going to elaborate on answering this with some 2 cents that I got to share, but real quick, the next question was, which online dating apps are best, the pros and the cons of paid ones versus non-paid ones? Though we didn't get too much into, I guess, like specific information on each one, we can both agree that it was hard to find as far as like per app, the success rate. And
I do have a stat on amount of people that pay. Only 27%, so almost 30% of online daters pay $50 or more on dating websites and apps. So Well, I know on Bumble, like, really to have, like, anything more than just...
Oh, I didn't know that on even those apps you pay.
Yeah. Oh, and Tinder, too. Oh, no. There's options to pay. There's the free version, but if you want to have, like...
Do you know the difference? Like, what the... Yeah. What are they? What are the features that you're paying for?
The features? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just going to throw some shit out there. Don't take my fucking word for it. But basically, it's shit like this. Like on Bumble, you can do, like a super like, or you can see, if you pay, you can see all the guys that have already liked you.
Okay. So it sounds like better use of the algorithm or more immediate satisfaction
satisfaction, a little. Yeah. It's all just like give a little here. On Tinder, I think there's something similar where you can like only see people whose accounts are like verified, whatever the fuck that means, or like shit like that. It's just giving you like more features or
like functions. Safer. That's why should you have to pay for that? But okay.
I think that's what they're getting at, is like verified account. Like they're verified that this is them. They're linked up to their Instagram, their Facebook, their blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah. So shit like that. I know Match.com, like you have to like pay for it.
And it sounds like you had given a stat on Match.com and eHarmony. It sounds like those are the most successful, or suggested that it's more successful for like serious relationships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's something to note. As far as which one is best, like we said, we are inexperienced. We have little experience, but it seems like it's really like about what you're looking for. And I'm going to comment on that again in a second. But the last question we got submitted was, recently single and I have no idea which one to use. Help. So that one is more of general advice maybe that we could give from our research. How about you start? Or do you want me to start?
I'll start. Yeah. Recently single. I have so many follow-up questions.
How did it happen? What's your pattern? Recent? What's your sign?
I think as far as I could say without really knowing this person or knowing anything about this person, or even if they're a male or a female.
Male.
Oh, male. I would say it depends on what you're looking for. So if you are looking to stay single, I would say hit up Tinder and get some hookups in. If you actually do want to have a relationship, I don't know what type of woman that you like, but I do know that typically women do feel more comfortable on Bumble, which is why Bumble was created. So,
okay. So there was this podcast that I referenced during my segment, but I didn't talk about at all, like as far as the name and everything. So this podcast is ran by Nicole Byer. She's executive producer, host, and everything. The podcast name is called Why Won't You Date Me? Literally her literally her intro song is Why Won't You Date Me? Why Won't You Date Me? Why Won't You Date Me? Why?
Oh no.
Okay. And the episode, the episode title is The Science Behind Dating Apps. But she had a guest host, Emily Heller. And in this episode, the whole podcast is around their dating experiences and what it's like. But with Nicole Byer, she's Black, and she's a little bit, her body type is like heavier, and she's a comedian. And she is really transparent about her experiences dating and kind of talking a little bit about the injustices of dating app to give a perspective on what that means. Her co-host or her guest host for this episode, Emily Heller, stated some facts. So I found it interesting that she was referring to a Cupid blog that was stating these facts or these stats. The most viewed people on apps, dating apps, and online platforms are for women, Middle Eastern women, And for men, can you guess?
White.
Who's the most, yeah.
So I will white, tell you right now, I did not include this, but I will tell you right now, when I was like, another reason I was like, this is not going to work. I saw on these swiping, white dudes. That's it. Crazy.
That's interesting that it was stated that they were also the most viewed. Like, not just like, because I didn't go looking for like a white man. You know what I mean? When I did have an experience with Hinge. But that's really all that was available, mostly.
Yeah, no, nor did I.
Least viewed men and women, who would you think?
Least viewed women?
And least viewed men.
I would say ethnic. Asian.
Women? And men?
I'm going to say Asian men.
Okay. So least viewed is, yes, Asian men, but least viewed was for women, black women. And So this is interesting because she is black and like she talks about her experiences. And one thing in particular that she said, this episode was from 2017. And so that was like the beginning of the Trump era, the Trump disasterness and stuff. And so she made a comment about what that climate was like for her during that time.
Oh my and God.
It's fucking sick. She goes, after the election, my Tinder blew up, and she speculates that it's white guilt that made it so that people just like were messaging her, and like her co-host was like, what the fuck? As anybody would be asking themselves right now, like what was said? What do you think they were thinking? And she says that she thinks that from what she was seeing, she basically concluded that they were thinking, I'm so sorry that this happened. Maybe if I fuck her, I'll feel better. Like, maybe, you know, because it's.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because skip forward to literally just this past year, 2020. It was more than an election. It was like a. It was really intense. It was just so much that was.
Yeah.
Made it a new environment. Yeah, very lightly. And there are a lot of articles that I came across that was like the dating world, mainstream dating culture being online/apps. This was something that affected that, you know, all of a sudden you see people in their, for example, captions or bios being like, I didn't vote for Biden and I don't want to talk to anyone that voted for Biden. Or, you know, so it really like intensified, I guess, the culture or the environment, the dating world for a little bit. And I just think that that is sick. But also imagine I'd rather meet and ahead of time know that somebody's racist instead of meeting them in person and then having like a situation where, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would prefer to know off the bat. To me, political preference is important to me.
So
personally, for a partner. And yeah, if you want to list on your bio that you are a Trump supporter or whatever the fuck it is, great.
Good. I get to cut off.
I do not want to. Yeah.
The podcast I mentioned prior, X Appeal, they had a conversation about this too. And I want to say it was a girl who was like, I'm okay with not knowing and not talking, not being like a first conversation because I would rather not like have that objective from the jump. But I guess some people think that way. I would want that. I would want it 100%.
I think that if you are a person of color, that is important to you. If you're 100%. Not, if you're of European descent, of course you don't care about that.
Of course you're not considering that. Yeah, and yeah. That's true too, because
of course you don't care about that.
The guy, he's French and he lived in Canada, he's lived in California, and he actually dove into like how the reason that he doesn't care is because,
and that's a good point, it's just too, not actually, something. Yeah, I should have just say of color, if you live in a...
If you're well-rounded culturally.
If you live in an area like Canada where you don't have the racial divide that you do in America, then yeah, you probably don't care about that. If you don't have the political divide or whatever it is, then yeah, you probably don't care about that. So that's fair too.
Yeah.
But is this shit? I need to know.
So yeah, so I want to say, like, my only 2 cents about this entire topic is that, like, I had a so my only experience has been 2 seconds, literally less than 24 hours on Hinge when I was on vacation, and I was like, okay, like, I want to see what it's about in a place where I don't know anybody, and that's why I did it. It was safe to do it that way. And I, first and foremost, I wasn't in a state of mind where I was like, I want desperately to find
somebody. She was drunk.
No, I actually wasn't even drunk. It was actually more of like my friend was doing it with me. And so it was like somebody to do it with. But if any of these guys are listening to this right now, the only conversations I had were with, well, because the only conversations I did have, Hinge asks you like what. I mentioned
podcast. Oh, you were whoring out our podcast.
Yeah, right. as we do.
As we always do. And as one does.
And yeah, so like I can't say that I look back and saw it as beneficial to me. But I will say this. What I learned about Tinder, and the only thing that has changed for me, is that it's okay for like some people to think like us, like, I don't know. I'm not going to say never say never, but I don't think that that's my style, and I think it's okay. However, I don't see Tinder as just like a hookup app. That's been most of the experiences that I hear about are that. But like you said, there's all, you know, people that are in whole ass relationships, and there are stories, and there are numbers to suggest that like you can meet people on there. What I would like to say,
so many people that are in relationships from dating apps, like I mentioned too, I know so many people.
Yeah. Like I obviously see that for some it works. And my point is that what I've learned is that it really is, also anybody who submitted questions, it really is like what you make of it, from what I gather. I know that I can't make anything of it because
yeah, it's supposed to be like, you go on there, what do you want? Are you in a position where you just want to meet people and have fucking fun and go on dates? I've fucking been there.
And that's fine. Yeah, that's fine.
Or are you in a place where you're like being serious and you want to find someone and settle down? Like, that's fine too. And I would say that everyone should try it and see, and then make the decision, do you like it or not, or is it something that would work for you or not?
Can't knock it until you try it.
Yeah.
The sickness that I want to address is this, that we kind of like we're talking about, and it kind of might sound like we have a negative connotation on mainstream dating culture, but the sickness that we want to point out is, you covered like psychologically, there's just a lot of people that I think are using it, and then they don't understand that the value that you're diminishing about something can psychologically fuck you up, where you might have something good, but because you know that if in an argument you're like, it's too much work, I can easily just go back and see what other matches I have. And that's the sickness to me with this mainstream 100%. Dating culture.
Okay, yeah, no, 100%. And actually, one of the men that I had conversated with, but he said exactly that, basically was this whole dating app thing is really fucked up, because if something doesn't work out or whatever, you just, it's no loss. You just hop right back on and find somebody else.
Yeah. On that note, those who are single and seeking and are exploring mainstream dating culture today, proceed with caution. What would you say to any listener right now who's in the state of mind of wanting to find out more information on the science behind dating apps?
I would say give it a try. Figure out what works for you. know if something doesn't work for you, not to force it. And yeah, don't force it. I would say just don't force it.
Yeah. I would say you ain't gotta say too much. Rather looking at eyes, so you in the And that's on that. We hope that you learned and laughed and considered.
We hope that you live, learned, loved.
And we hope that you immediately go change your dating profile.
We hope that you carpe DM'd.
Keep it cute. And if you ain't over 6 foot, don't say that you are. Up on Tinder, I'm 6 foot.
No, on Bumble, hella people, it's like you have to put in your height. And hella guys that are short on there are like, I guess height is a big deal on this app. I'm like, yeah. And in real life.
And like in everything.
Same way it is in real life. Bitch. Okay, we have to end this recording so I can tell you some tea.
Well, that's on that.
And catch us next week.
Check in next week for what we choose to share.
We don't know what it'll be, but
neither do you.
Stay sick with it.